HR 1320 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. Washington is just hours away from a possible government shutdown. The White House's Office of Management and Budget has told federal agencies to execute their plans for an orderly shutdown. Republicans and Democrats in the Senate voted on two funding bills, failing to pass legislation that would avert it. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
We want to sit down and negotiate, but the Republicans can't do it in their partisan way.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune.
If the Senator Leader Schumer wants to sit down and have a conversation, he knows where I am. We're right here.
CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns on what could change as soon as tomorrow.
National parks and museums will likely close. We've been talking to people who say that TSA agents, air traffic controllers, they will remain on the job, but they won't get paid. They will hopefully be back paid, but for now they'll have to show up to work and not be paid.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
The Bucks without Giannis. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks held their media day to kick off their season, but Giannis Antetokounmpo not there. He's in quarantine in Greece after testing positive for COVID on a Zoom call. Giannis asked how he feels about missing the start of training camp.
Definitely disappointed. Bummed out that I'm not able to be there with the team and just like, you know, as a leader, I don't feel good about this. But at the end of the day, like, this is life. But at the end of the day, I think they will understand. If I'm not there today to see them, I'll be there in a few days and we get the ball rolling.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers have a rough schedule ahead with games against Iowa, Ohio State, and this Saturday they travel to Michigan.
Our ability to maintain and sustain some consistency as we continue to push and grow is going to be every bit as important as anything else.
That's the Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The soul of the West lives on in every pair of handcrafted cowboy boots. At Boot Barn, we're proud to carry a heritage brand that's been preserving tradition and honing their craft since 1879. Made with techniques passed down from father to son, Justin boots stand for quality, comfort, and timelessness. With roots going back over 100 years, they're more than a bootmaker. They're a Western legacy. Justin boots at Boot Barn.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Are we having fun yet? Is this what we wanted? Is this what we voted for? Tired of winning yet? Are we? Because look, we're on the brink of a government shutdown. There's still wars going on, even though Trump said that he solved everything. Inflation's still up. Wages haven't gone up as fast. Most people I talk to, life not doing better, but we do have lots of entertaining chaos, which we knew that was coming. Lots of distraction. So if your thing is, hey, I wonder what the president's thinking today, you're doing okay. If the first thing you do is wake up in the morning and go, gee, I wonder what Donald Trump put on his social media site today. What kind of craziness has come out of Donald Trump's truth? One of my favorite this week was him attacking Zoran Mamdani. He put on his Truth Social that, and again, this is one of those things that's just kind of amazing. But he self-proclaimed New York City communist Zoran Mamdani, who is running for mayor, will prove to be one of the best things ever to happen to our great Republican Party. He is going to have problems with Washington like no mayor in the history of our once great city. He goes on to say, remember, he needs money, money from me as president in order to fulfill his fake communist promises. He won't be getting any of it. So what's the point of voting for him? This ideology has failed always for thousands of years. It will fail again. And that's guaranteed. President DJT. And there's a lot. Like most of the spaghetti that Trump throws against the wall, the spaghetti that's covered in ketchup, Mamdani doesn't identify as a communist. He does identify as a democratic socialist and has explicitly rejected communism, but, you know. And it's one of those things that maybe Donnie doesn't know. And I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt that he's not that bright. Good used car salesman. You know, details not his thing. Ideas guy. We'll go with that. It's pretty simple, though, Donnie. Since, obviously, this is too tough of a concept for our president to understand. Democratic socialists believe in democracy. You know, that little thing where people vote and have a say. That thing that you don't seem to be all that concerned with. Democratic socialists want a fairer system. You know, where workers have some power. Companies still exist, though. People get to keep their stuff. It's simply about going, hey, we want to take some of the harsh edges off of capitalism. Change it slowly to a more fairer system like our grandparents had. And we do that through elections and rules and debate and discussions and going, hey, wouldn't you like to have public transit? Wouldn't you like to have, you know, good roads? Wouldn't you like to have, you know, places where you can purchase your groceries at a reasonable rate? Wouldn't where there are food deserts? Wouldn't you like to have, you know, fill in the blank, healthcare, retirement security, all those things? Now the communists, on the other hand, Donald, they simply want to take everything. Everything's the state's. Not even the fascistic kind of government that you're moving towards. Communists, it's all the government. So they would come and they would take your gold-plated golf carts. They would grab your gold-plated toilets, you know, all of that. Even your tiny little hands they'd probably want. And it would all be property of the government. No private property, no choice. Just one big government telling everyone what to do. And I don't really know anybody who goes, that's a good idea. And the elections that they do have or would have, yeah, they're not really. They're more for show, for entertainment. It's a dictatorship, not a democracy. Now, dictatorship, oddly enough, something that you and your supporters seem to be getting fairly comfortable with. But it's not what you're throwing, what the Red Hats have bought into. That anyone who doesn't agree with unfettered capitalism is somehow an ist, socialist, communist. And details, words, just words, don't matter unless they don't like them. And the sad reality is we have a president where facts don't matter, where truth doesn't matter, where definitions to words don't matter. I'm more comfortable with a democratic socialist than a laissez-faire free market capitalist. Because we've seen what free market capitalism has done. And it does it really efficiently. It makes rich people richer. It makes poor people poorer. And the people in the middle, they get to fight over scraps. That's us. That's the rest of us. The idea of having a system run on democratic socialist principles means that, you know, we get things that we need, like healthcare, like education. But yes, the capitalists, they still get to make money. Just not a gazillion dollars. And it's one of those things where you go, maybe we should be having this conversation. Maybe we should be having real conversations about what Americans really want. Because the weird thing is even the reddest of my red hat friends see a role for government to do certain things. I've yet to find any hardcore anti-Social Security people, for instance, especially the ones who are collecting it. I've yet to find many people outside of the fringe who think that access to public education is a bad thing. The fringe, they want to privatize, profitize. We'll still get my kid education, but heck with those, because we still need hand labor. So the weird thing is you've got people who are running the government who don't believe in it and want to destroy it. And you have a populace of people who want government to at least do something right. But we've got people in charge who won't. And it's odd because, you know, you've got Trump racing towards a shutdown and Republicans racing towards this shutdown, pointing fingers at Democrats. Like it's their fault. Now, oddly enough, the most recent Morning Consult survey shows that 45% of voters would blame Republicans. 33% would blame Democrats. I personally blame all of them. And I blame us. I think us more than anyone. We put the wrong tools in the box. We're doing a job with a wrong set of wrenches. And it's time that we start coming around to having real conversation. Because understand, this potential shutdown, and it's going to happen. I don't know, it's going to be a day, two, five, seven, 10 weeks. Don't know. But what we do know is that Republicans, again, are proving exactly who they are. Enemies of we the working people. Enemies of stability. Enemies, really, of common sense for working people. Now, common sense for billionaires and the people who really want a government shutdown, they're in line. But even a little bit not so much. Wall Street's not thrilled. We've got this government shutdown hanging over the heads of millions of working families. And what is the Trump administration doing? Evidently, we've got another political stunt popping up. You know, we had the big parade, cost millions of dollars, wasted millions of dollars on vanity projects. While you've got people out there, the ones who are actually doing the work, keeping this country running, those are the people who are going to suffer and struggle and face the consequences. And the reality is, as I've said, I'm not surprised by any of it, because this is who the Republicans are. It's who they've always been. So the absurdity now comes on the brink of a shutdown. There's a gathering at the Marine Corps base at Quantico, a last-minute circus, I guess, thrown together with hundreds of generals and admirals who are going to be flown in on short notice. And again, the possibility of a shutdown, delaying the checks of active duty troops and cutting off support for social services for their families. Our administration's funneling money into an event with, I haven't found a reason for this. There's no clear purpose. So you got families sitting at the kitchen table staring at bills that might not be able to be paid, while Republican leaders are busy staging, I guess, military political theater now. And it got me thinking, well, is this the moment? Is this the coup? Is this the moment when we just decide that we don't need elections? Because we're getting used to having troops in the cities. And look, we've seen this before. Trump's military parade, what that cost? $92 million, I think the number was. And now, I'm not talking about the scale here. But the logistics to fly in all of these people, to house, to feed, to secure hundreds of top-ranked officials and their staffs. That's money that could be used to keep our government going. And, you know, it's just not some casual meeting. It's a production. It's an expensive production. And all at the same time, while you've got defense agencies are figuring out what are we going to do if the government shuts down, if Republican government shuts down? So call it what it is. It's a distraction, a performance, a waste. And while Republicans stage their authoritarian spectacle, it's very real working people, people who wear the uniform, and people who support those who wear the uniform, who are going to be at risk. You got military families who don't know if they're going to be able to cover the rent or childcare if and when this shutdown hits. And you've got civilian workers who they handle everything from base maintenance to medical support. Where are they going to find themselves if furloughed? On the unemployment line? Oh, yeah, we don't have a line anymore. You have to do it digitally online. And the top brass? Well, they're being ordered to an unprecedented, unnecessary assembly so a Fox News anchor turned defense of war can puff up his chest and pretend he belongs in the room with men and women who've spent their careers living the warrior ethos while he wants to preach to them about, I don't know, whatever. Portland, I guess. Sadly, it's insulting, it's dangerous, and a slap in the face for the people who keep this country moving. But here we are again. This is what they do. This is who they are. And are we surprised by any of this? The answer should be no. Should be no. But unlike routine exercises or carefully planned joint meetings at the Pentagon or wherever, this gathering that they've got going on at Quantico has really no clear stated purpose. I know the military is hush-hush and we've got to keep, military intelligence quiet, but there's no published agenda, no explanation beyond the political optics. But here's what we do know. When we concentrate that many top military people in one place without a clear reason, it's a security risk in itself. Leaves the nation vulnerable, not stronger. Imagine delaying or undermining responses to actual real-time global threats because you had to stage a managed fake flex of Wario ethos patriotism so that the cameras could pick it up and you could put it on social media. Sorry, not a strategy. It's kind of a farce. A sad reality is Pete Hegseth, a man whose credentials are thin compared to every defense secretary who's come before him. I guess he's going to lecture these veterans and these top military folks. He's going to lecture them. Leadership requires a little bit of experience, don't you think? A little bit of perspective, some vision. Not just sound bites for cable news. But again, I go back. Republicans don't care about competence. They care about loyalty tests. They care about feeding propaganda. They care about staging impressive events to make them look good so that we working people can see them on Fox News. While you've got working class families at, Fort Bragg or Camp Lejeune or wherever, wondering if they're going to be able to put food on the table next week. Every dollar spent on these charades is a dollar not spent on medical care for veterans, housing services for members, or for improved staff to reduce, anything. Poverty, suicide rates, mental health problems. Every hour wasted babysitting these kind of events is an hour away from actual problems. And I would argue creating more problems. It's obscene, it's grotesque, but it's what you expected. This is what they do. Manufacture chaos. We're threatening another shutdown, undermining workers' rights. That's at the heart, the core of their MO. And don't forget the bigger picture here. While Republicans hold the budget hostage and threaten working families to be permanently fired and miss paychecks forever, they keep finding new ways to funnel money to, they're billionaires, and also to, vanity shows and corporate handouts. And they'll cry about the deficit when it comes to funding, schools, healthcare, Social Security. But there's no ceiling, man. No ceiling when it comes to theatrics and giveaways. They treat us, our livelihoods, like poker chips on a table, like pawns on a chessboard. While their cronies, they get to walk around, with their pockets full and their bellies full. So what should happen here? Congress and the Pentagon need to be forced by us, by we the people, to release the details of what this big meeting is about, what the purpose is, what's being spent, why it was called, who's benefiting from it. Because it's not the troops. It's not keeping the country safe. It's not about you or me. It's about some kind of vanity for someone. This isn't leadership. It's a scam. It's Republican politics as usual. And as we go flying toward a government shutdown, it's working people who are going to be harmed the most. Because again, they don't care about you and me. They don't care about working people. They never have, never will. This is part of their political game. And their spin machine is going to do the job of pointing fingers at Democrats. Democrats' fault. Because they didn't give in on every one of our insane right-wing wet dream fantasy. Now, do I think the Democrats have the stones and the backbone to keep up the fight? I really don't. But good on them for trying. It's a start. Want to hear your thoughts. You think it's going to happen? Think government's going to shut down? And do you think Trump lives up to his promise of firing everybody? I know he wants to. I know our billionaires want him to. Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So for all those people concerned that the social credit score is coming, and I've got a number of people who've said, it's coming, Rick, it's coming. And you go, yeah, it's just not the government that's going to do it. And I've been saying that from the beginning. It's not going to be government who does it because they're gutting government. The only thing that can restrain what is coming is government of, for, and by we the people. The only way we stop the horrible effects of AI and robotics and all of the things is through legislation, through restraining things. You know, I was reading an article recently about, you know, the jobs, because I got three kids. You know, what's their future going to be like? What kind of jobs are they going to be able to go, hey, I can make a living from my life in this. I'm going to gain these skills, and they're going to be around for a couple of years. And it was going through this whole process of, you know, you need kind of jobs where you're flexible and you're thinking and you can think on your feet and be personable and all this stuff. And one of the things that they threw out there, they said the jobs that have a strong regulatory backing, which means that we say, no, these are jobs that AI shouldn't do. We're going to make a law that says, no, these are jobs that we should keep. And this is where I'm in favor of as well, because there are some jobs, like being a truck driver, that I'm just not comfortable having a machine do on the road without any, I don't know, safeguard. Considering, look, if you're going to run on virtual rails on an internet system that I can't seem to watch video clips on without it buffering, wait till we can get the simple stuff done first. Wait till we can get the idiot social media stuff done right first. And then let's talk about hurling an 80,000-pound vehicle down the highway with me and my wife and kids on it. Only once I can watch a video all the way through. Once we can watch South Park all the way through. But I was reading this article about Larry Ellison. It was over at fortune.com, where he had predicted, I guess about a year ago, that people were going to be good, you know, once we started recording them everywhere. You know, people will be on their best behavior when they know they're being recorded. And I find that very hard to believe. For a smart guy, you kind of got to wonder. Now, I do think he's not entirely wrong when you go, we're going to have a government or a corporation or someone oversee everything and then use it against us. You know, you have the right to remain silent thing. Only now you have the right to do nothing thing, or it will be used against you in a court of law. Because, and this is where Ellison is an interesting character in this, because his company, I guess Oracle, didn't they just do some kind of big $300 billion deal with OpenAI, where they've purchased, I guess, computer power over the next 5 years in one of the largest cloud contracts ever? I mean, this is, it's above my pay grade, but it's one of those things that makes me go, hold on. You got this guy who thinks the best scenario to keep people in line is to record everything they do and then have a computer filter through for the right behavior. It gives me pause because it is his view that this is where we go. Last September, evidently this is how the story goes, at a financial analyst meeting, he did predict that AI would help process all of the footage. Because one of the reasons that it hasn't been used now is there's so much of it. There's only so much you can do. You know, I work in a place where there are cameras everywhere. And there are only, you know, a handful of people watching the cameras. So you know that no one's watching you every second of every day. You know, it's possible. You know, it's possible someone's there. And I've talked to people who, yeah, it's always there. Nobody watches. I don't care. What about when it is being watched every second of the day? And every step, every facial expression, every word that comes out of your mouth, every sigh is now being evaluated. This isn't government's doing. This is corporate America's doing. And this is what I've always told my Red Hats. As much as they fear Barack Obama's government, I fear corporate America. I fear government out of control. I fear a Trump government. Marry a Trump government and corporate America. Word for that, fascism. I do get really concerned. But you stop and you think about where we are and where this is heading. The idea that the guy who now could possibly own part of TikTok got his hands in this OpenAI, one of the biggest computer companies in the world, billions and billions of dollars at their disposal. You kind of got to wonder what's being built. And I know I'm really trying hard not to sound conspiratorial that, you know, the moneyed interests are taking over the Bilderbergs and the Illuminati, and, you know, go down the list of the groups that my right-wing things think tank friends think are harmful. I think Business Roundtable. I think these big corporations who have so much money, so much interest, so much power, I think they're dangerous. But you've got this kind of marriage going on between the Trump world and the AI computer world, to where, well, don't get out of line. Big Brother's watching. Don't question. Big Brother's watching. Don't think. Big Brother's watching. And the scary part in all this is we're being distracted with government shutdowns or what bit of chaos comes out of Trump's mouth. There are real problems on the horizon. There are real issues that need to be addressed. And we're not doing it. We're nowhere close to it. there's an opportunity. And this is where, you know, I don't write off my red hat friends. There's an opportunity to convince them that, yeah, you know, there's something to your social credit score, but it's not government doing it. It's going to be a corporate interest doing it for profit. They already know virtually everything they need to know about you already. And thanks to Trump and Doge and all of that, they have the rest. The question is, how far are you willing to let corporate America go before we start reining it in, or we start demanding better, before we start demanding an economy that works for all of us so we have the ability to fight back? What I want to hear. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. When we come back, Patrick Crawley is going to be here, president of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO, to share some thoughts on a big project going on in his neck of the woods. Back after this.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5 WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy and mild tonight, a low in the mid-50s. And mostly sunny and warm again for Wednesday, a high in the upper 70s. Heat continues to build through the rest of the week, highs in the 80s. Storm chances return Friday night through the weekend. It's 67 right now.
We want to thank our listeners for following the Rapids Report over to the podcast world. Your growing support for the show and your favorite guests, area nonprofits, is greatly appreciated.
We love getting the word out about the great things nonprofits do for the community. Special thanks to Crockett Septic for sponsoring this show as they continue to help us bring you great conversations.
Listen to the Rapids Report at WFHR.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So good news, positive news, actually, coming out of the New England state, especially for workers, as it's been reported that there's an agreement between offshore wind developer South Coast Wind and the New England area labor unions. A press release put out by the Climate Justice National Resource Center says, quote, this is the first of its kind commitment in the offshore wind industry will ensure that all permanent jobs created to run South Coast Wind will be done with family supporting union jobs that come with fair wages, health care, retirement security, worksite protections, and rigorous training standards. It goes on to say that it's going to help the community, it's going to help energy needs, it's going to do all kinds of great stuff. This kind of a big deal. Kind of a big deal. And here to share some thoughts on what this means for the New England states and the state of Rhode Island in particular, I've asked Patrick Crawley to come talk with us. Patrick's the president of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. Patrick, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. I'm happy to be here.
Kind of a big deal. I mean, this is kind of a big announcement in this era of what appears to be some labor tension, to have this big company go, hey, we want you guys, we want unionized workers, we want to pay good wages. This is kind of a big deal, isn't it?
It's a really big deal when you think about the scope of it. I mean, this project that we're talking about building off the coast of Massachusetts and Rhode Island is 2.4 gigawatts of electricity. Now, to put that in perspective, the Revolution Wind project that just got back on track is 704 megawatts. So this is three times the size of that project. We had 1,000 members working on the Revolution Wind project. So this project, once it gets up and running, is going to be thousands upon thousands of good-paying union jobs for the region.
And it's going to be good for the community as a whole, because there's that reverberation effect. And there have been numerous studies done on this. When you have good wage jobs, when you have workers with disposable income, when you have families that aren't scrimping to keep a roof over their head and food on the table, everyone does better. So it's a good thing.
In addition to that, Rick, it's going to lower the cost of energy for people in New England. I mean, this project has the ability to heat and electrify 850,000 houses across Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. I mean, those are working class families that are going to see their electricity bills drop as a result of this project. We don't have our own domestic source of energy, but right in our backyard, right out in the ocean, we have the ability to have our own domestically sourced, union-created energy supply, and it's going to benefit, like you said, not just the community in terms of the jobs that are created, but it's going to lower our energy costs.
Well, let me ask you the big question, because you know I'm going to ask you about Revolution Wind here in a moment, but you've got an administration that seems hostile to wind, to solar, to alternative energies. How much of this is part of that?
Well, this is going to be a fight. We know that. I mean, this project has got almost all of its permits, and they're ready to rock and roll. And our members are ready to get out there on the water building these turbines. So, but we know we're facing strong headwinds out of the administration. But we took them on Revolution Wind, and we won. You know, one of the things I said when the project got stopped is I envision a time when we're going to see a press release or a headline that says, small man takes on small state and small state wins. Well, our small state of Rhode Island won on Revolution Wind, and we're going to fight tooth and nail to make sure South Coast gets developed.
Or the other side of this is the press release is going to be Donald Trump takes credit for the work, the incredible work you did, because now he loves, or he's always loved wind. Because the reality is it's there. We should be using it. It should be creating the energy that we need, the jobs we need, because I'm sure you know as well as anyone, our grid's not getting any younger, and our need for energy is not getting any less. So kind of, you know, like my friend Brent Booker says at LIUNA, we got an all-of-the-above strategy. We got to figure out how we're going to keep the lights on and do it in a way that's not going to break people.
Absolutely right. Brother Booker is 100% correct on this. When you think about building a just transition to a carbon-free economy, that's going to take years and decades in order to accomplish that goal. In the meantime, we've got laborers, painters, electricians, carpenters, all different kinds of workers, iron workers, who are going to be involved in the legacy fuel economy. But our members understand that that economy is changing. And we want to make sure that as the jobs of the future are developed, that those jobs are high-paying union jobs where they have robust apprenticeship programs that are paying prevailing wages. And we're going to make sure that it's going to be the labor movement that's leading this transition.
But Patrick, you're killing birds.
Yeah. Yeah. Killing birds, we're killing whales, all of the above. I mean, Rick, in a really real way, the fight for offshore wind is, in a nutshell, the fight against the MAGA ideology. The half-truths, the misinformation, the misrepresentation of facts and figures, the anti-science nature of it. All of those things are really all right and encapsulated in the fight for offshore wind. Now, we've been able to fight back against those things here in Rhode Island and across New England. But I think if we take this fight across the entire country, we're going to be able to demonstrate to people that if you're going to be talking about the jobs that my members work in day in, day out, you better come with more than misinformation and anti-science stuff, because we're here talking about the facts. And working class people are going to have great jobs. Working class families are going to see their energy bills lowered. We're going to build a 21st century grid, and we're going to use union workers to do it. So don't come at me with any of that misinformation, because we're going to tell it to you right to your face.
Yeah. Now, I look at the Revolution and Wind project, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because, you know, it was, as I understand, 80% done, all permitted. It was all but, you know, putting on the finishing touches. And the administration stopped it for no reason that anyone's been able to give me that makes any sense, other than, you know, Biden did it, so it had to be bad. These were union jobs. These were good family sustaining wage jobs. Walk me through why you think it happened, and then how you guys were able to fight back on this.
Yeah, the why is still an unanswered question, Rick. You know, we never got a ransom note, and we were expecting it. We wanted to hear from the administration in Washington, you know, if you do this, we'll turn the power back on. We never got it. And I think a lot of it is just this MAGA ideology that looks at offshore wind through all of these, you know, misinformation lenses. But we stuck together as a labor movement. We worked together through the AFL-CIO here in Rhode Island and Massachusetts and Connecticut. Our building trades councils were at the forefront. We put rank and file members who were directly impacted in front of the media so they could tell their stories. And I think when we got the workers and themselves involved, when we were talking about how their lives were disrupted, how the jobs that they were working on were a path to the middle class for them, it started to resonate with people who were a little bit skeptical or maybe didn't understand the issue. And partnering with our friends in the Attorney General's office, the governor's office, the congressional delegations, we were able to make the case to the public. And I think, you know, we won in court, but we still need to win in the court of public opinion. And we're going to fight every day to make sure that we do.
And this is what I was going to ask you, because, you know, I have a lot of building trades friends. Some of them wear red hats. A lot of them vote for Republicans. This seems to be an opportunity to go, what I've been saying for a very long time, what Project 2025 wrote down, this administration, this president, the people who are behind him don't care about workers, especially union workers. So for me, this is an opportunity to maybe push that message of, you know, who are your friends?
Well, and to take a look at the picture, the big picture. I mean, if he can stop an offshore wind project, he can stop any project. And you got to remember, these are billion-dollar operations. This isn't two guys in a pickup truck putting a deck on the back of your house on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, this is a multi-billion-dollar, multi-international operation. And to think that the Trump administration would simply put the closed for business sign on the east coast of the Atlantic seaboard in the United States is bad enough. But if he could do this to us, he could do it to any kind of project across the country. And that's why having the voices of the rank and file was so critical to making our case.
No, you're spot on. And I still love your frame of we didn't get a ransom note, because I'll be honest with you, I was kind of waiting for that as well. But I walked it back going, no, Biden had his name on it. And he's really been against windmills for a very long time. So, no scientific, no rational, no reason that anyone can come up with other than he just had a problem with it.
Rick, you got to imagine that we're confused by all of the rhetoric, because offshore wind in the United States started off the coast of Rhode Island, the Block Island Wind Project. That project was the brainchild, believe it or not, of a conservative Republican governor named Don Kachary. And when he started that work with the Rhode Island building trades, he looked out at the ocean and said that Rhode Island could be the Saudi Arabia of wind. And when you think about what that means, a domestic source of energy that's not subject to the whims of the international marketplace, that's going to put Rhode Islanders, whether they're union or not, put Rhode Islanders to work, having good jobs, it increases our tax base, it increases our tax revenue. I mean, all of the things that Republican Party, you know, leaders used to say is why they should be supporting offshore wind.
So how do we get to a point to where this becomes non-controversial? Because this, for some odd reason, and help me here if you've got an idea, because I can't figure it out, how wind and solar and other alternative energy sources became taboo with some. I mean, I get that we love our cars, and I do. I love my truck, and I love all that. But it seems to me that, you know, whatever I can get to make my life a little bit better, we should be moving in that direction. I'm confused at how we got to where this is a political partisan issue, especially from the party that believes in states' rights.
I think one of the ways we do this, and, you know, your shirt is one of my favorite out there. You know, we talk about working class people here in Rhode Island. You know, by working class people, we mean the people that actually show up and do the jobs every single day. Doesn't matter if you're driving a truck or you're working in a classroom or you're a college professor. If you've got to work to make sure that your family's fed, then you're a working class person. And these jobs are good working class jobs. And just for comparison, one of the groups that is opposed to offshore wind is the Mansion Society in Newport, Rhode Island. You know, the places where all the robber barons used to have their houses. They're suing because they think that these wind turbines are going to ruin their view. Well, guess what? It's the Fifth Ward of Newport, where all of the working class families live, who are the first on the front lines of climate change, because their houses are going to be flooded out. The mansions are going to be fine. Their view is not interrupted. Yeah. But it's the people that I represent that are going to lose their houses to climate change. That's how I think we talk about this. This is about working class families, making sure that working class people are going to be protected during climate change.
No, that's an excellent frame, because, and again, I come back to Trump's problem with it. He didn't like it in Scotland on his golf course. You know, he doesn't like the view. I think they're kind of awesome. I've driven through Iowa, and I think the fields of farmers who have lined their fields with windmills, I think it's pretty awesome. Texas, same thing. How is it that the two biggest wind producing states are the reddest states in the country, and ones like yours Do you think there's a divide there?
Well, I think people are trying to manufacture a divide. Because you're right, these things are beautiful. I've had the chance to take a ferry ride out to the Block Island Wind Farm and seen these things in operation. And they're majestic. I mean, they actually are beautiful from my point of view. And to know that working class Rhode Islanders, the men and women from the Rhode Island construction and building trades that I represent, had a part in that, it just shows that what we can build can not only be a benefit to society, a job-creating program for my members, but it could actually be something that's going to enhance the entire experience of living and visiting Rhode Island.
It's the last line of questioning I've got for you, because look, the thing that I think is great about this is this company has agreed that all jobs going forward, because all the construction jobs now, as I understand, are union jobs with good wages, good benefits, job security, all that. They've agreed that going forward, this is going to be an industry that's going to be heavily unionized, which means good jobs for people, a good trickle-down effect, if you will. To me, this is the right way of doing things. How do we take this and move it into other areas? Because, look, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of people are struggling. A lot of workers are having a hard time. We've had stagnant wages for 40-plus years. This seems like good messaging, but something we might want to expand and share.
Oh, I hope people take the agreement that we reached with South Coast and amplify it up and down the East Coast of the United States and into Canada and Mexico if need be. I mean, the idea that not only is the construction phase of this project going to be done using union labor, the operations and maintenance, the jobs that are going to be here for the next 50 years are going to be good paying union jobs. And if my sisters and brothers in Maine, New York, New Jersey, North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, anywhere along the East Coast want to take what we did as a template and make it even better, that's what I hope they do, because we have no, you know, jurisdiction on the perfect here in Rhode Island. But if we're the first ones to get it done, someone's going to do it better.
Wow, that's awesome news. Patrick, congratulations for you and all the folks there. I wish you guys the best. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again as this continues. And, well, let's hope the administration stays out of the way.
Thank you, Rick. Anytime you want me, I'm at your disposal.
Appreciate it, Patrick Crawley, president of the Rhode Island AFL-CIO. I want to hear your thoughts. This is kind of a big thing, isn't it? Wouldn't you like to see this in, well, in your neck of the woods? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that began the Elaine Massacre. The massacre took place in Arkansas, where more than 100 black farmers and sharecroppers were gunned down for daring to organize their labor. The year before, a black farmer by the name of Robert L. Hill had founded the Progressive Farmers and Household Union of America. Union members pooled their money to purchase land. They also hired a lawyer to sue planters who did not give black tenant cotton farmers their fair share of the profits. The group grew in membership in the Arkansas Delta region, including near the town of Elaine in Phillips County. But white landowners would not allow this challenge to their power. Armed white militias came to a church where the union was holding a meeting. The black attendees were also armed. Gunfire broke out. In response, white posses and federal troops unleashed a wave of terror across Phillips County. Hundreds of black residents were arrested. At least 100 black Arkansans were killed. Some estimates of those murdered is considerably higher. 5 white people also died. 122 black men and women were charged with murder. 12 were given the death sentence. No white vigilante, however, was ever charged. The convicted African Americans appealed their cases. One appeal for 6 of the defendants went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where it was overturned in a landmark ruling. The year of 1919 was one of the deadliest years of violence against African Americans in U.S. history. Civil rights activist James Weldon Johnson called those bloody months the Red Summer. 26 race riots left thousands of African Americans homeless and hundreds dead, from Chicago to Washington, D.C. to Omaha.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I gotta tell you, I like Patrick Crawley. Good guy. doing great work up there. And I got to tell you, the organizing that they're doing going to make people's lives better. And, you know, as I was talking with Patrick, it reminded me of when I first entered the workforce. Because what they're trying to build up there, and good on them for really moving on this. They're using the leverage of building this new technology, these offshore wind farms in this area, and using both, you know, political power and the power of labor and the power of public sentiment and all of this to say, hey, we want those jobs to be good jobs, the kind that have good wages so people can put a roof over their head, food on the table, kids go to college, vacations. You know, what used to be the American standard of living, that American dream of working hard, playing by the rules, getting ahead. They're working at that. And, you know, as he was talking about the fact that it's just not about the construction job. It's about all of those other ones, the maintenance, the operation, everything else that goes along with this, that those be good wage union jobs with health care and retirement security and training and all the stuff that you expect from a good paying union job. Trying to build a culture of that. And it got me to thinking back when I started the job that I've done for, you know, almost the better part of 35 years. When I started in the LTL, the less than truckload trucking part of the trucking industry, it was 85, upwards of 85 to 90% unionized at the time. And I remember the company that I worked for, Roadway Express, before they went out of business. You know, not too long ago, because, well, long story, but they used to always have a chart, like the graph, if you will, on the wall that said back when I started in the late 80s, 90% unionized, and they tracked, because of deregulation and all the assaults on unions, they tracked the share of the industry that union workers controlled as dwindling. And they used that as a way to go, we can't give you a raise. You know, we've got to cut corners. We've got to do away with work rules. We've got to compete with bottom feeders. And the problem here, and this is where it's how we've gotten where we've gotten. This is why so many workers are angry. Why we're kind of societally in the place where we are because everybody's tired of getting kicked in the teeth. Everyone's tired of working hard, getting paid crummy wages with very little benefits, and then being underappreciated. This is not surprising. And then when you have jobs that you go, well, what do I care? I can't live on this wage anyway. You get people who are ready to leave for nickels. That's not a great economy. It's not a good environment for working people. Now, it's great for the boss. It's great for the folks who, the investor class, the Wall Street types. It's great for them because their labor costs are low. And you've got cheap, exploitable labor that you can move around whenever you want because they don't have any rights to demand anything. And you get them desperate enough that they're pliable, that they no longer complain at work because it's a master-servant relationship. Of course. You're not gonna yell at the master. You're gonna go home and kick the dog and the wife or the neighbor. And that's kind of where we're at. So as I listen to Patrick talk about, hey, we're gonna build this to where it's a union job in this industry, I go, good, we need that. Because the things that I've always taken for granted, because there was the culture of uniformity overtime after 8 hours. Healthcare, retirement security. I don't have to drive junk and that's dangerous down the road. There's a lot of things that we now don't take for granted as much. And we need to get back to it. The fact that they're building this is great. Now, for me, the weird thing is you've got an administration that if he really wanted to curry favor with his strongest supporters, because understand the building trades folks are pretty strong supporters of Republicans, or at least the membership, because they make good money. And, you know, they've been sold this idea that, you know, vote for Republicans, they're going to cut your taxes. And nobody's really been on the other side going, hey, yeah, maybe you might benefit a little bit from that tax cut if you're really up there. But what are they going to do to your job, your conditions, your wages, your benefits, all of that? And this is where I think there's an opportunity here for Patrick Crawley and other building trades unions and other unions to go back to their members and go, look at what you're seeing. I had one guy who, you know, I talked to occasionally, who, you know, told me that during the campaign I was just bloviating and I was blowing things out of proportion and it wasn't gonna be that bad. Well, he texted me, goes, sorry. Sorry, that's it. He voted for Trump. This is not what he expected, even though we were very clear on what to expect. And it's played out pretty much as we said it would during the campaign. For those who thought, you know, oh, you're just being hyperbolic. No. Read the book. Read the pages. Paid attention in the first term. Listen to the think tank world. The moneyed interests who pay people to dream up bad ideas. We're living all of their wet dreams. And the only people really able to fight back at this are going to be unions and their workers and we the people. So again, this is why I think it's so important that these projects be defended. And again, I come back to it. It's really weird to me that you've got the Keystone XL crowd didn't make a peep when Trump shut down Revolution Wind. Not a peep. So all of that whining and complaining and all of that about those jobs, because it was actually about 250 jobs, which, look, you know, is any job loss is a bad situation. But Revolution Wind was 1,000. And then the reverberation effect, if they could have shut that down, they were going to shut possibly this one down, which would have meant tens of thousands. But again, I'm not hearing a peep out of the Keystone Pipeline, Keystone XL people, of which they were loud and angry and, you know, wanted Biden on a stick. And yet, our unitary executive did what he did and nothing, not even a, oh, gee, that's bad. Nothing. Which just goes to show it's not about the jobs. Not about any of that. It's about the cult. And if you're still on the Trump train at this point, you're part of the cult. Everyone else who is still angry that inflation is still going up, that egg prices are still high, that gas prices are still high, that insurance prices are still high, rent prices are still high. If you're, what was that guy, Jimmy McMillan? Do you remember him? The rent's too damn high guy from New York from years ago. Life's too damn high. If you're in that camp, maybe start time to looking around at who you voted for. And with this shutdown coming, as we talked about earlier, this is going to hurt working people. This is what does trickle down is pain. What does trickle down is the suffering. And out of that, as I've been saying, going to be the solutions. So for friends who are keep going, but Rick, you know, aren't you upset? No, predicted this, told you it was going to come. This is it. Are you happy? We're going to finish off where we started. Is this everything you wanted? And a ball of wax? Is this everything you needed? Does this make you happy? Tired of winning yet? Because we're in this. And if the government does shut down in a day or two, or if it lasts another 7 days or another 10 days or another 7 weeks, it's still working people being held by the short hairs. And it's going to take us being tired of that. Start voting for people who understand what it's like to be us. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Do you think it's possible? Or do you think this is just what we earn? Want to hear it, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any part of the program? Podcast, as always. Thanks so much for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The federal government appears headed toward a partial shutdown at midnight Eastern time. The Senate voted down two competing Democratic and Republican proposals to keep the government funded. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
Democrats do not want a shutdown. We stand ready to work with Republicans to find a bipartisan compromise, and the ball's in their court.
President Trump saying earlier,
well, the Democrats want to shut it down. So when you shut it down, you have to do layoffs. So we'd be laying off a lot of people that are going to be very affected. And the Democrats, they're going to be Democrats.
The White House's Office of Management and Budget has told federal agencies to execute their plans for an orderly shutdown. According to CBS's Chris Van Cleve, it could impact airports.
TSA officers are not high-paid government workers, so missing a paycheck can have a profound impact. Air traffic controllers would also work without pay, and in January of 2019, air traffic control sick calls resulted in